Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Friday, October 21st, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link, the words Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it, and use it as often as you'd like, absolutely free. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or they've called and given powerful testimonials about how the use of these tools has positively impacted their lives. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It also contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. And we hope people do all of that soon and often because it frequently leads to people having an improved quality of life. And secondarily, it tends to leave people with comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, please give us a call. The call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1 when you do, it will put the little icon of a hand by your phone number, and I will be able to turn on the microphone and announce it by your area code, and we can have a conversation. And we appreciate when people do that because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. That intention is to be of service. Other things we're doing with this work, last year we worked through all of the lessons in A Course in Miracles, one day at a time, and this year we're working through the book, The Way of Mastery, and where we left off in our last time together, which was just yesterday, we finished the review of Lesson 24. And we've now reviewed at least twice all but two lessons in this work. And these shows, the first hour of these shows has been edited out and then made available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. There's a separate page for these shows since January 10th that have just the first hour edited out because they're specifically relevant to the Way of Mastery and the work that Michael and Jeannie do in the second hour. While it's completely compatible with this work, it's not focused on the Way of Mastery as a tool. So in order to have those for ready access to people, if they want to follow along or go back and review, I've taken the time to edit out the shows down to the first hour and then upload them to the website at Way of Mastery or the MindShiftersAcademy.org. And there's a separate page for the Way of Mastery on MindShifters Radio with commentary, and that's what we're engaged in here. There's also a page for just the recording of me reading the Way of Mastery lessons without commentary. And I'm in the process of updating that. Earlier today, I uploaded lesson 25 because there are people who want to just listen to the audio file without commentary and or people who want to make a comparison. What does it sound like if it's just being read, and how is that different from the Way of Mastery with commentary that we've been doing since January 10th? So please feel free to take advantage of that and or direct people you know who might have an interest in it to the MindShiftersAcademy.org website. And as always, feel free to keep us updated. What are your comments? What are your questions? What are your answers? What are your testimonials? Is there a way we can arrange that on that website that would be of more use to you, make it easier for you to take advantage of it? There are also some shows that have been singled out as highlight shows. And that's on a separate page. Highlights for the Way of Mastery with commentary. I have been stunned at times to go back and listen to what it was that was flowing out of my mouth during one of these shows when no one called in. So have at it. Enjoy. And today we'll start moving forward in the last book of the Way of Mastery. This is called The Way of Knowing. And my understanding, the way it's been told to me through the website on ShantiCristo.com, in conversations with JM himself, the gentleman who channeled this work, some of the readings I've done that, of other books that he's put out, including The Way of the Servant and the Yeshua Letters, my understanding is that when JM himself was starting this, he did not know this was going to be a three-year project. He did not know that it would turn into one spoken word session per month for even 1 year, let alone 3 years. And as it was given to him to understand from this consciousness, this wisdom that was bringing forth this material, it was intended to be three separate books. And then the foundation, which was formed and had a board of directors and created a nonprofit, etc., they decided it would be better to publish it as one book, The Way of Mastery, the Big Blue Book, now it's called. So this third book, the first book was called The Way of the Heart, The second book was called The Way of Transformation, and we just reviewed the last lesson in The Way of Transformation yesterday. And now the third book is titled The Way of Knowing. And the idea here, as I understand it, and it's sinking in more and more as I work with this set of tools, is for us to literally have a different purpose, a different mindset day in and day out for our lives. I remember one time in one of the older codependence to interdependence lectures that Dr. Michael Rice did. And it was with his previous wife. And I remember it specifically because one of the things they said in there was, in our culture, most of us get into relationships and we have the goal, these two goals, let's acquire stuff and let's prove who's right and who's wrong. And they talked about how that's probably what's led to the very high divorce rate and so many of the arguments we have. And they recommend, throughout the course of that lecture, they recommend that we choose a different set of goals, a different purpose for being in relationship. So instead of when I get up in the morning and figure out how I can make more money to buy more stuff, or figure out how I can prove to my partner that he or she is wrong about the discussion we were having, the discussion slash argument we were having over the weekend. Instead of that, the new purpose, the new target, the new intention for being in a relationship that they suggest is, I want to heal. I want to heal everything in me that's less than love. I want to join with you and support you in healing everything that's in you that's less than love. I want to ask you to support me as I do my healing work to identify and remove from my thought system, my energy system, my emotional baggage, my emotionally structured implicit knowings. I want to remove from that field of energy and my history anything that's less than love. And that's the purpose for my being in a relationship with you. And it struck me deeply, I don't know, maybe the third or fourth time I listened to that lecture, that I hadn't even heard that the first few times that I listened to that tape. There were other things that caught my attention. And this theme of choosing a different purpose for living your life or being in a relationship or starting the day is woven into great spiritual teachings from a variety of different teachers. I remember Guy Finley had a series of talks he did on the idea that if you want to have a different experience of life, you have to choose a different reason for living, a different set of goals, a different purpose. And that's what I believe the way of the heart, the way of transformation, and the way of knowing have been guiding us to. As we were talking about, reading about, discussing through the commentary in the last two lessons especially, it's been laid out. There have been suggestions that have been made. There have been exercises that have been offered. And lesson 24 says, now it's up to you. It's up to you. And one of the things that's highly recommended is that you choose to view time differently. You choose a different purpose for yourself. You choose to fulfill the purpose of being the conduit for the energy of the Christ mind or the energy of creation, the energy of God, the energy of light, the energy of love. And you view your time differently. Your time is not this tool that you have to accomplish the goals at your office or the building of the bridge or the amassing more coins in your bank account so that you can buy a new car or a new stereo. While all of those things might happen, and all of those things can be valuable, the actual reason my view of time and my reason for having time and using it is to help myself become more of an open conduit for the creative energy. So my purpose for life, my purpose for living is no longer to prove I'm right and other people are wrong. It's no longer simply for the purpose of achieving or accomplishing this or that goal in the physical realm. All of those things can happen, and they're wonderful. It's like Guy Finley has a saying where he says, I'm not saying don't be a good householder. Yes, you should be a good householder. You should make enough money to keep you and your family alive and healthy, and you should keep things clean, and you should exercise so your body functions. He's saying, do that after you've established the first excellence. And the first excellence in Guy Finley's language would be like what this tool says in an earlier lesson where it says, the only relationship in your life that holds any value for you is your relationship with the forces that created you, with the forces that sustain you. And this is not to say that other relationships have no value. This is to say that unless you have this first relationship in alignment, in purity, in clarity, in consciousness, the other relationships don't flourish. They don't grow the way they can. So lesson 25 tries to remind us right off at the beginning. It says the title is, you remain as you are created to be. Your culture has taught you that you're bad and you're wrong and you're a sinner and you're not smart enough and you're not pretty enough and you don't have enough of this or that quality. Or it's told you that you're better than other people around you, etc., because of where you were born or the color of your skin or the way your body looks or whatever. And this lesson, this series of lessons, this tool wants us to understand what is true always, remains true always. You were created as the creator, as the extension of love and form, as the extension of the creative energy manifesting in form. And that remains the truth about you. The text here reads, now we begin. And now we begin is valid tomorrow when I read this book and next year when I read this book. And it was valid last year when I read this book. Now we begin is a reference to the fact that you only have this present moment. And if you spend a lot of your mind energy focused on the past or focused on the future, you prevent yourself from living fully in the moment. So the text reads, now we begin. Beloved and holy friends, we come forth to abide with you as we initiate the third and final part of this formal information in the way of mastery. This information will, as time unfolds, be shared with millions. We have chosen to entitle this last group of lessons, The Way of Knowing. What, then, is required for true knowledge to exist? How does one live in whatever dimension of creation when they abide in true knowing? Beloved friends, that which is required for true knowledge to pervade the whole of one's consciousness is simply this. drum roll please, simply this is required for true knowledge to pervade the whole of one's consciousness. I don't have a drum roll sound effect. I should add it here to the recording. When I post this later, edit one in. Here is what is required for true knowledge to pervade the whole of one's consciousness. Not for one moment have you ever lived life. Rather, in truth and in reality, life, which is but love streaming forth from the source of all creation, has sought to live as you. Never at any time has there in truth been a false self. Never has there been a time in which something called the ego has actually existed. So, beloved friends, what is required for you to live with true knowledge pervading the whole of your consciousness? You need to understand it's not you breathing. You are being breathed. It's not you looking at something. You are being looked through, seen through. It's not you living a life. You are being lived by life itself. Life, which is but love streaming forth from the source of all creation, has sought to live as you. The text goes on and says, you've heard us say many times that what is true about you is true always, and that you remain as you were created to be. You remain the thought of perfect love in form. You emanate from the mind of the Creator as a wave emanates from the ocean. The great secret of your human existence, indeed the great secret of the many journeys you've taken, is that they have existed nowhere except within the movie screen of your own mind. Does this mean that your dreams have had no effect? Within the dream itself, as long as you choose to be identified with it, you will experience the effects of the choices that you have made. Yet, now, as the heart has touched purification, as you have truly been willing to allow transformation to occur, all that matters and must be remembered is that you, as you thought yourself to be, has never truly existed. It has been a smokescreen. It has been a chimera. It has been an illusion. We talk about this in so many different ways. Dr. Michael Rice talks about how it's all smoke and mirrors. When you have an upset with somebody else and you think you know exactly what they should do to make their life better or to not offend you, it's all smoke and mirrors. It's your mind creating an image of that person dressed in your problem. And whatever advice I have for another person, even when I'm in the middle of a therapy session as a psychologist, if I say something to somebody in the form of, you really need to, ... I know instantly, on my good days when I'm wide awake, I'm about to speak something that's perfect advice for me. And hopefully it'll be useful to the people I'm addressing in the therapy session. And at the same time, if it comes out of my mouth as, you really need to, here's my advice to you, etc., I know it's my mind trying to get me to see what's keeping me from knowing and loving life more fully. This is the perfect advice for me, because the self that I am never truly existed. It's all smoke and mirrors. The self that I think I see offending me in the form of another person doesn't exist anywhere but in my mind. This is why you can be at a, you can be in a party, you can be in a room full of people at a party, and you look across the room and you fall madly in love with somebody, and you think they're the most beautiful person you've ever seen. Just think about it. How the heck does that happen? Here's 25 or 30 or 40 other people in that room, and they're not all focused on the same person saying, this is the most beautiful person I've ever seen. How could it be that you're seeing that person so differently than everybody else in the room? The evidence is right in front of our faces all the time. We are creating our perception of the world. We are creating our perception and coloring our relationships with everyone we meet. And it's done, as lesson three in this, in the first book, The Way of Knowing, or The Way of the Heart says, it's done because in the moment when we forget that we are creating our own experience of life, in that same moment, our mind begins to project our issues into the image that we are creating of the people around us. The perceptions that we create are distortions. They are never 100% accurate. They can't be, because they're created out of this tiny fraction of data that's hitting our senses, and our senses only record a tiny fraction of what's actually going on in any given moment. So we can't have a full 100% accurate picture of what's going on and who the person in front of us is and what life is. We literally live in illusion. We literally live relating to the hallucinations we create. Anil Seth has a wonderful set of videos on it. He continues to do research on it. Anil, A-N-I-L, is his first name. Seth is his last name, S-E-T-H. And you can find it on YouTube, and all you have to do is search for Hallucinate Perception, or Anil Seth and Perception. This book is highlighting this for us. Who you think you are has never existed anywhere but in your own mind. It has been a smokescreen. It has been a shimmer. It has been an illusion. Just as who you think you're relating to with your husband or your wife or the people you work with, they are not as you think they are. The first thing you can instantly know whenever you have a negative thought in your mind about yourself or somebody else or a negative emotion is, this is a lie or based on a falsehood. Whatever your mind is showing you, it's a lie or based on a falsehood. The second thing you can know is it's not about what's going on in the moment. It's about something from your past that you brought with you into this moment that's getting resonated by the interpretation you're placing on this current life event. You don't see the people around you. You see your mind's images of them. The text goes on here and says, knowledge then consists of a crystal clear awareness that while creation streams forth from the mind of the Creator, you cannot find the place that a separate self began. And you have absolutely no knowledge of where your end will be found. In truth, you do not know what is going to unfold in the very next moment of your experience. This can only mean, since you do have a next moment, that something else is living you. In the beginning of the journey, there must be desire, for no one can come to the Creator without it. For just as you use the energy of desire to dream the dream of separation, that which closed your heart and that set you on a thousand useless journeys, propelled and compelled by fear, by judgment, and by doubt. Likewise, desire has been necessary for you to be willing to face your illusions and to look more deeply at your judgments and to see that they can have no value except that which you extend unto them. It has indeed required desire for you to want to awaken. And I think it's useful here to refer to what do they mean by desire, because it's not what most of us have carried around as a definition for that word desire. From Lesson 4, in The Way of the Heart, what they mean when they use the word desire in this work is, my way of summarizing it is, the energy of creation that wants to extend uniquely through you in this present moment. That is what they refer to as desire, what they mean when they use the word desire. It's not the thing that you want to acquire. It's the energy moving through you that creates an impression. So what you desire is nowhere near as important as your ability to tune into and begin to recognize the energy itself upon which those impulses are carried. So the text goes on and says, as you've used the power of intention to continually etch into the mind the beliefs and perceptions that are the very foundation of the dream of separation, so too have you learned to use intention through time, which is your creation, in order to awaken from time and from fear. Just as you once used the power of allowing to give permission to the creations held within your mind to seemingly and apparently take form in front of your eyes, and you allowed their, quote, reality, close quotes, to become so deeply entrenched that literally worlds have been birthed from it, so too have you needed to use allowance in the process of transformation, allowing yourself to feel what you did not want to feel before, allowing yourself to see differently what you had once insisted could only be seen in a certain way. Allowing has been the very field from which all forgiveness you have learned has sprung forth. And again, forgiveness in this work means dismantling perceptions. All perceptions are false in a way because they cannot be comprehensive experiences of the truth of life, because perceptions are generated within the individual mind. And again, the individual mind only has access to a tiny fraction of the information that's hitting the senses, and the senses don't even recognize much more than a tiny fraction of what's actually in existence in terms of energies, in terms of consciousness. So you have used the power of allowing. I'm working through the book from Guy Hendricks on The Big Leap, and he talks about how powerful it is, how necessary it is when he's dealing with people in conflict to begin to resolve the conflict, because the first step is they have to allow the possibility that there's another way to look at this situation. Another way to talk about it is they need to cancel their need to be right before they can be open to the possibility of other ways of seeing a situation. Open to the possibility that something being presented by the other people, person or people in their experience in the moment, in their discussion, something about their perception might have value. I have to move into allowance before there's any possibility of resolution of a conflict. And, of course, we're taught the opposite. We're taught the only way to resolve a conflict is to get better and better at arguing and get better and better at debating and pleading your case and shouting the other one down and proving them right, or them wrong and you right. The text goes on here and says, allowing has been the most central of keys in the process of your healing and awakening. For when you truly begin to touch upon the power of genuine allowing, you begin to taste the first levels of true freedom. You have learned that just as you have allowed new beginnings to occur, you've also discovered that you have the power to allow endings to occur within the field of phenomena that you call the world. Yet I say unto you, surrender is the completion of the keys to the kingdom. Just as once you had need of surrendering to your illusions in order to identify the fundamental energy of your being with your illusions, just as you have had to live in surrender to even allow allowance, just as you have learned to rest in surrender even to allow intention, just as you have learned to rest in surrender even to allow desire to be made new within you, as you enter the way of knowing, the final surrender is entered. Now, this reminds me of Dr. Michael Rice talk from the early days. He would say, let's talk surrender. And no one in the Western world wants to talk about surrender. And they'll get vehemently angry and fight you tooth and nail because they don't want to hear about surrender. And Michael Rice says, what they don't understand is they're always surrendering to one thing or another anyway. In our culture, most often people are surrendering to hostility or fear. They're either charging after something, trying to attack it and destroy it and prove them right and the other person wrong, or they're running and hiding from it in fear. The invitation with work like this, whether it's A Course in Miracles, The Way of Mastery, or Guy Finley's work, or Pema Chodron's work, or Byron Katie's work, or Diedrich Wolzak's work, the invitation is to surrender to life, to surrender to love, to surrender to peace, to surrender to be taught by a more integrated, broader field of vision, intellect, intuition, wisdom, consciousness, awareness, whatever word you want to use, to be taught anew, to surrender to love, to surrender to peace, to surrender to the mind of the Creator. The text goes on and says, the final surrender. This is the heading of the next section. There is only God. There is only creation. There is only good. Use whatever word you want that isn't so emotionally triggering. The final surrender, there is only the life flow. There is only creation itself. The text reads, that is the surrender which is beyond the comprehension of all the languages and theologies of your world, beyond all that can be spoken or uttered, yet not beyond what can be known, felt, realized, and lived. It's possible to live in the recognition that everything is connected, that all of existence is the magic, the essence, the miracle of creation expressing in form. The text goes on and says, for in surrender, you look upon a perfectly harmless world, whether it seems to be outside of the body or within the body itself, or the body-mind itself. You look upon the comings and goings of the world, and you find that all things are, of themselves, perfectly empty. You look within and discover that no longer need you obstruct from the conscious mind, from your awareness what the body-mind has experienced from the moment of its conception. No longer is there an obstruction to the flow of experience. No longer is there any self seeking God. Where and when that self has been surrendered, the mind awakens to the simple reality that there is only God, life, love, the flow of creation, and that you are that one. As you seek to find words to communicate to yourself, or perhaps to another, the great wonder, the great mystery, the great truth, the great simplicity of awakening into true knowing, you will strive to find a way to communicate, as I have tried to find ways to communicate with you. You will seek to communicate to your brothers and sisters that there is only the flow of life in creation. Some might call that God. And yet, there is the power of the mind to perceive yourself as the created, which in truth you are. For creation gives rise to creation, looking back upon itself. Mystery of pure content gives rise to temporary form in order that pure mystery might be apprehended, comprehended, experienced. You are then the very process whereby that one who alone is without a second, that one creates the temporary form through which the one apprehends and knows itself. You are that one. That is the perfect effect of mystery that would pour forth of itself and make visible what is invisible, to birth through time and form that which cannot be contained within it. For love, capital L love, is unfathomable. You cannot control it. Love is vast beyond all measure. You cannot contain it. Love cannot be possessed. It can only be allowed. Therefore, indeed, beloved friends, the very keys whereby you once used the power of your own mind to create the illusion of a separate self are the very keys utilized by your own mind to awaken you to the truth that you have never been. There is only and always this mysterious moment. And all things have been birthed from perfect mystery. The awakened mind, awakened from false arrogance, looks upon all things and says, I am that one. Yet no trace of separation or duality exists, for you are not apart from all things that are arising. The wind blows through the trees, the wisps of cold air, winter rain, the warmth of the sun upon the skin of the body, the embrace of a lover or the laughter of a child, the awakened mind abides, that abides in perfect knowing, no longer obstructs perception, feeling, the flow of thought, or the flow of experience. It no longer looks to see how it can make things different than they are. It looks only and lives from what it most truly wants, which is to simply abide in its own nature and allow capital L life to flow from that nature, dancing in the infinite myriad displays of form. What then is required for true knowledge to exist? What is indeed required to abide in the way of knowing? It is this, to fully accept that not one trace of your seeking has ever brought you closer to reality. Not one modality has ever held the power to bring you closer to your Creator. And that never could it have ever been truly possible for you to make progress toward the consciousness of the Creator. For all the while, you have been the one you are seeking, simply pretending to be a seeker. And for what reason have you entertained the thought of separation? The reason is simply this: to do it. For the mind of God does not deny any possibility. The mind of the Creator understands all things exist within itself. For it sees that nothing can obstruct the purity of its own nature. Forever, creation abides within herself, infinite, vast, radiant, and silent. The infinite field of pure knowledge, pure intelligence, out of which all things and all possibilities arise. This is why I once said unto you, quote, "You have never looked upon another, for you see only yourself." Again, we were talking about this just a few minutes ago. This is a concept that, raised in the Western world with the Western mind, this is going to rattle some cages, shake some chains. Guy Finley has a story about this, one of his older stories. He says, there was a person who had been doing some spiritual work, learning to handle difficulties with grace, etc., learning to dismantle blame, etc. And they woke up one day and they realized they were in a new kingdom. And as they woke up and started exploring the house they were in, there was a knock at the door. And, of course, it was a brand new house to them. They'd never seen it before. And they opened the door, and here's a minister who's there to usher them into the new kingdom, to show them around, to explain to them how things work in this new kingdom. And the minister understands this person has never been here before. It's like a person waking up or being born, except they're in a full-size human body. And so they start giving them a tour of their house and explaining all kinds of facets of the laws that govern the flow of life in this new kingdom. And, of course, the person who was there, brand new, felt excited. After a little while, tour of the house, tour of the outside grounds, the minister left and said, "I'll be back in a couple of weeks." And this person was sitting in their house. There's a big, beautiful picture window. They're looking out, and they saw somebody drive by in a fancy sports car, and they went out, and they were so attracted to this person, and they started talking to him, and the person is one of their neighbors, and he's got this great business deal, and they get involved with him, and the next thing you know, they've lost $4 million, and they're devastated. And now they don't want to leave their house. They only leave for essentials. And one day they go out to the store, and they're at a store, and they see this person, and they're just absolutely disgusted by this person. The revulsion was sickening, and they couldn't wait to get away from this person. They get away from the person. Next thing you know, they get a call, and the person on the other sounds so, other end of the phone sounds so genuine, and they've got such a wonderful nonprofit thing. They were trying to raise money to help these needy people, and they get involved with these people, and they lose another $1 million. At the end of a couple of weeks, this person now is basically not leaving their house. They're just depressed. They're anxious. They're afraid. Everything they do is wrong, everything. And the minister comes back to check things out. "Hey, how's it going?" And the person says, "I'm miserable. It's horrible. Everything's backwards in this. I can't believe it." "Well, what do you mean?" And the person says, "Well, there's one neighbor and a fancy car and went out there and lost $1 million. this other person. I saw them at the store. I was absolutely revulsed by them. And a couple days later, I saw them, and they did one of the most loving things I could ever imagine. These other people call me, and they're trying to help everybody. Next thing you know, I lose another $1 million. Everything's backwards. Everything's upside down. And the minister said to them, let me ask you something. When you look out your window, how do you look out your window? And, of course, the person who's new to the kingdom thinks, now this minister is nuts. What is this, a trick question? What do you mean, how do I look out the window? I look out the window and I see what I see. It's a window. And the minister said, well, remember when I first came and introduced you to this, I was explaining to you how things work in this kingdom. And one of the ways things work is that when you look out the window, you must first see yourself in whatever you're looking at. And the person who was new to the kingdom thought, well, that's always bugged me about this window anyway. It's like highly reflective. It's got one of those filters on it. So, you know, you got to like cup your hands to see outside, and because mostly it's reflecting what's inside the room. And they said, there's got to be a problem with that. But the minister said, no, that's the way this works in this kingdom. In order to see anything truly, you must first see yourself in whatever you're looking at. Now, that's a Guy Finley story from years ago. I don't know if Guy Finley ever even read Way of Mastery, but here's the last paragraph that we were just reading from the Way of Mastery, Lesson 25. In the Big Blue Book, it's on page 297. And for whatever reason that you've entertained the thought of separation, the reason is simply this. You did it just to do it. For the mind of God does not deny any possibility, for it sees nothing can obstruct the purity of its own nature. Forever, the Creator abides within herself, infinite, vast, radiant, and silent, and the field of infinite pure knowledge, pure intelligence, out of which all things and all possibilities arise. This is why I once said unto you, quote, you have never looked upon another, for you see only yourself, your capital S self. This is the same message as we were talking about earlier. Dr. Michael Rice, it's all smoke and mirrors. This is the same message that's contained in the codependent to interdependent worksheet, where you make a list of things that people have, make a list of people who've offended you. And then in the next column, you write what they did to offend you. In the next column, you write what your punishment thought is to them. In the next column, you write what your advice to them is. And in the last column, you write the title, how I'm going to apply my advice to that person in my life, because I never look upon anybody but myself. What I see out in the world is a reflection of what I'm seeing and feeling and creating as a belief about myself. And then when I generate advice for somebody, it might be good for them. I hope so. I'm a psychologist. It's part of what I do. And yet most of the time I'm not formulating advice for people in my therapy sessions. I'm asking them questions and helping them discover different ways to look at their own self. But if it does happen that it comes out of my mouth in the form of, you really need to, I know this is perfect advice for me. You are only looking at yourself. You are that one. If you want to get things right in your life today, this is you live in a kingdom that's very similar to the kingdom in Guy Finley's story. If you really want to get things right, you must understand that you're only looking at the projections your mind is creating. You're not actually seeing the world outside of you. You're seeing your mind's best guess, your hallucinations, your illusions. choose again, as Diedrich Wolczek would say, especially when what you've chosen to perceive is leaving you feeling any kind of a negative emotion. Choose again. Take a breath. Understand this is all an inside job. You are only viewing yourself projected into your mind's image of somebody else. If your mind says to you, you absolutely need to do this, that, or the other thing, or that person really needs to do this, that, or the other thing, it's perfect advice for you. And the way to transform your life experience is to work with what you have inside you, because what you have inside you is the only thing that creates your experience. There's that wonderful line from the Thomas Gospels that says, if you bring out what is within you will save you. If you don't bring out from within you what is within you, what is within you will destroy you. We may not like it, but this is just the way our life is. This is just the way existence is. So here we sit on a Friday. We're only a few pages into lesson 25. I will do some work in the next couple of days to try and make sure that the remaining lessons that have been recorded all the way through lesson 31 are uploaded to the mindshiftersacademy.org website for those who want to listen without commentary or listen ahead. And I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. I hope you see fit to share the information about our support groups, which are Tuesday and Thursday nights, although there will not be a support group this Thursday. I forgot to mention this last night in the group. This coming Thursday, there will not be a support group, but usually Tuesdays and Thursdays from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time, there's a support group for people who want to learn more about the foundations of this work and how to apply these tools specifically in their life in a very practical way. And we hope you can join us or pass the information along to somebody who you think might benefit from that. And have a wonderful weekend. I don't quite know what else to say other than to remind us all that we come from love. We're made of this stuff we call love. We actually are love, the energy of creation expressing in form, and everything else is false. So, Michael and Jeannie say they are going to be here for the second hour. I'm waiting for someone to show up on the switchboard for that purpose. I hope you have a blessed weekend. I hope you have success in ushering yourself into an experience of life and the use of time and the view of time differently. I hope you can start to view your purpose in life as being the conduit for a loving energy that goes beyond what your conscious logical mind can comprehend. Just as Michael and Jeannie often suggest that we choose a different purpose for being in a relationship instead of trying to accumulate things and prove who's right or wrong. Maybe we enter into relationship because we want to heal. We want to identify and release anything inside of us that's less than love. And maybe that is a better purpose in relationship than trying to prove who's right and who's wrong and or acquire this material. The material trappings of life. So our call-in number is 563-999-3581. If you call that number and press 1, I don't know how, but Jeannie might be able to see it on the switchboard. She says she's driving.
We are driving. Hey, Tim.
Michael will be live for the second hour.
Can you hear me, Tim?
You're on.
Say again.
Hello. Can you hear me?
All right. You're there. Welcome.
Yeah. Jeannie is driving, and I'm actually going to be doing the show and doing the switchboard on her phone at the same time. So this will be a new experiment. Wish us luck.
Have a wonderful show.
Okay. Blessings. Bye-bye. So welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. Honored and that we get to engage this conversation on first century Aramaic forgiveness and hopefully on the next level, next round of learning. I was just talking to someone on the phone, and we were kind of laughing a little bit over how profoundly the world is structured to give us the opportunity to learn forgiveness, that every circumstance needed shows up at the very moment we need it most. And when we're in resistance, it'll cause us to hold our breaths and falter. And when we do, it's the next opportunity, the next layer of healing. And how profoundly this mind can structure literally everything that we see down to the last detail, the last blade of grass, where we believe what our mind tells us, and that the reason we're holding our breath has nothing to do with us, but with that other person that's the cause of what's going on in our minds and in our lives. And, you know, there's an interesting paradox. And the paradox is that the way that you get to hold on is by letting go. And that makes no rational sense whatsoever until you get out of the brainwashed state of the culture and understand how the mind actually works. And to recognize, you know, that probably one of the greatest atrocities, you've heard me say this many times, but it fits here once again, one of the greatest atrocities done to us as human beings down through the ages is that we've had hidden from us the fact that we are by nature creators. You and I are creative beings. And we bought into the idea that that's not true. And we forget, or we block, or we refuse to remember that we're the ones creating the energetic patterns that we're experiencing as feelings, whether those feelings are sensations in our bodies or they are emotions in our minds. There's no difference. They're just as, you know, I used the example earlier of the coin. You know, we look at a coin and we say it's got a head and it's got a tail. But does a coin really have a head or a tail, or did we just make that up? It's just a coin. And at what point, if there is a head and a tail, can we peel off the head and leave just the tail of the coin? Of course, that's ridiculous. That coin is a singular event, and so it is with this mind-body unit. It is a singular event. And what happens from one perspective, we see in the mind. In the other perspective, it happens in the body. And if there's discomfort in the mind, then there's discomfort in the body. Now, we can anesthetize ourselves. We can eat the junk of the culture. We can use the mental disease of hostility. You know, literally, I've come to understand that hostility is a literal, diagnosable mental illness. Think about it. If there's something that causes us to do the opposite of what we would want to do in our lives, wouldn't that be a mental illness? And notice, every time that you've ever done something that you look back and you go, oh, I regret having done that, it was done out of some form of hostility. And so just the ability to stop and go, oh, there it is again. There's my mental disorder. Ah, I'm going to ask to be shown how to embrace that and to heal that so that I don't have to create this blockage of the active presence of love for anybody, no matter what they do. And what I end up finding is that I get to experience the active presence of love then 24/7, 365, until my mental illness shows up again. And I block the presence of love and I go into some other state. And, of course, because we live in denial, our mind shows us a picture that somebody else is the cause of what we're experiencing. And, you know, to that mind, we would say, liar, liar, pants on fire. To recognize that's just It's never the case. It's never true. But the reason why the paradox is true, that the way to hold on is by letting go, seems like a total oxymoron, lies in understanding how the mind generates its constructs, how the mind generates its realities. You know, reality is nothing but a fabrication of the mind. And, of course, the fabrication is the mind's in disturbance or distress, then so is the body, because the two are one. You know, we look at the coin and we say tail. We could call that mind. We look at the coin and we say head. We look at the structure and we call that body. They're just two perspectives on a singular event. What happens from one perspective happens in the other. And so if there's a disturbed state of mind, then there's a disturbed state of body. Of course, if you're eating the sad diet, or when you get home, you go, oh, I need a shot of whiskey to let me help you relax, or let me take a few hits of marijuana, then I can relax. Oh, I only use it to relax. It's like, right, excuse me. No, those things are used to cover mental illness. A mind that is functioning, body that is functioning, without the presence of love, is diseased. And it's time for us to grow up into adulthood and take responsibility for the moments where that happens for us, instead of generating pictures based in a lie that somebody else is the problem. So how do I hold on by letting go? Well, I say I want something. Whatever. What is that something? And you'll notice that you never go into, unless you're just a generally miserable person, you never go into a state of upset or pain or trauma, or have upset pointed at someone, unless either you or they are not fulfilling a goal that you hold for them. So I want a result. Here's the creation that I want. I have a goal for it. I load that goal in my mind. And somebody comes along, and let's say I want that person to do ABC, whatever it happens to be, and they don't. And I go, and when you didn't do that, that made me really mad. Right, okay. So you want a particular result. I haven't cooperated with you in creating it, and now you're mad because of what I did. You're not mad because there's mad in your mind or in your body. Think about that for a minute. Is that even slightly rational or slightly sane? I would offer not in the least. So recognizing that perception is nothing but a construct of the mind, information comes in through our senses about what's going on in the world around us, the actuality. We have a goal for the actuality. The goal isn't being mad. And we've got somebody else to blame for our state of mind or body. You made me mad, sad, afraid, glad, happy. Doesn't matter. It's all the same. It's all denial. So whenever I think or speak as though something outside of me is the cause of what's moving inside of me, I'm going to experience some form of perception. If the goal that I load into my mind resonates content in my mind-body unit that is based in some form of hostility or fear, then that hostility or fear that I'm in blame of somebody else about will be massaged into a picture of them. I'm not getting what I want, and so I hold my goal tightly, and I'm going to condemn them, tell them what's bad about them, tell them what's wrong about them, you know, really explain to them what their problem is. And the whole construct that I'm looking at is a reflection of the content of my own mind. Has nothing to do with that person. Well, you know, I sort of have an outline of them. I sort of know what they look like. So I massage all this content into literally creating a picture of them made up of everything that they, that my goal has resonated. And I use that data to make a picture, a thing called perception. Remember, I mentioned the other day the CIA quote in their research on human intelligence. The mind does not record reality. The mind generates reality. Each person lives in their own reality. So if my reality is made of pain content, it's because I have a goal that resonates that pain content, and that goal drives my perception of you. So now, Michael, tell me how it is that I get to hold on by letting go. Well, ultimately, what I want is to have this goal met. And as long as my mind is responding with pain content in response to the resonance of that goal, I'm going to inhibit my ability. I'm going to distort my mind's output sufficiently that I'll never produce the result that I want. So the letting go piece is in the shebagging of the goal. In the Aramaic language, the word forgive is shebag or shebak. And the word actually means to cancel. So what do I need to let go of to get to what I want? I need to cancel my goal. Well, but they should be doing that. I got it. They should be doing that. But here's the solution. When you cancel the goal for them to do whatever it is, and it might be yourself even as the object of attention, when you cancel your goal, that construct in your mind that's using your hidden pain will be collapsed and the root of your pain will be exposed. And it's with your pain, the energetic patterns of your pain, that you hold off or you inhibit your mind's ability to bring you what it is that you want. So by canceling the goal, your perception collapses in on itself. And when it collapses in on itself, it gives you access to the root experience of your pain. Might be 100 generations old. Might be something that happened 40 years ago in your life. It doesn't matter what it is. Imagine, you know, a good visualization for that. It's kind of a nasty happening, but it's a perfect visualization for what happens with forgiveness. We all saw the 9/11 towers go down. These huge buildings collapsed at free fall speed into their own footprint. When you cancel a goal that's driving a pained perception, that perception collapses into its own footprint. It's like it opens a pathway into your own unconscious mind. And when you can access the root energy that holds the pain, and you can access that directly rather than through projecting it into your pictures of someone else, and you can do that in the presence of active love, then the pain or the trauma, the thing that inhibits you from getting what it is that you want, exposed to love, begins to heal. And when you bring that energy forward to be dissolved, then by letting go, canceling the goal, you know, let's go back to the Course in Miracles just to refresh that. The definition of forgiveness is precisely identical in the Course in Miracles to the definition of forgiveness from the first century Aramaic. And if you look in Workbook Lesson 305, Paragraph 7, it says this. Here's the definition of forgiveness. I've never found anybody working with the Course that knows what the definition of forgiveness is. It's right there in black and white. I didn't recognize it until I understood it from the Aramaic. But what it says, paragraph 7, Workbook Lesson 305, is let go all the things you think you want. Your goals. It calls your goals trifling treasures. It says let go all the things you think you want. Your trifling treasure put away. Your goal canceled. Your perception collapses. And now you have a clean and open space in your perceptual mind for love to appear. And when you expose the underlying raw energy of the original trauma, and of Course in Miracles tells you to return your mind to the point at which the original event happened. And most people think they have to think about it, remember the deep, dark, terrible thing that happened to them. We suggest you forget that. Live as love, and when you find yourself unable to, look at the goal that's driving your perception. Cancel the pain perception, and the remembering or the returning your mind to the point where the event occurred is a function of forgiveness. You cancel the goal, you drop right into at least a level of the energy that needs to be processed. You may not go all the way in the first, the second, the tenth, or the hundredth time you do that particular forgiveness process, but each time you do, you'll peel off another layer, another level of the trauma that's being held from the original event that created the trauma in the first place. So if I cancel the goal, drop into the part of me that is in pain and is therefore withholding my experience of what it is that I want, by bringing that pain forward in the presence of active love, my pain dissolves. Literally, the energy is transmuted. Once I complete that project, there's no longer any inhibitor in my mind that will keep me from having the result that I want. The only reason we live in the why is this happening to me again experience, why, gee, that very thing that I wanted so much and it seems so simple and so many people seem to have it, why don't I? It's because there's an inhibitor inside yourself that keeps it away or keeps you from perceiving that you have it. And when you forgive that part of you by canceling your goal, letting go, processing through the inhibitor, and by letting go, you get to hold on. You get to produce the result that you're looking for. Now, you may go back, as we said, do that worksheet many, many times to process through every layer. As a creator, every layer of what inhibits you from creating that thing that seems so elusive in your life. And virtually everyone has that, whether it's the approval of a friend or a parent or a relationship or abundance. It really doesn't matter what arena of life you're living it in. If you hold energetic patterns, whether they're yours personally or they came into your structure through your genetics, if you don't ever go inside and clean it out, then you literally will, one of two things will happen. You will never, ever be able to create the result that you want, or you may have already created it, but your mind inhibits you from receiving it and recognizing that it's been there all the time. And so when frustration comes up, it's time to stop and go. When anger comes up, when sadness, grief, when any of those mental disorders come up, those things that throw the mind of sanity out of you and have you functioning from a different mind, when they come up, recognize that it's not time to blame somebody else and start looking at them for what they just did to you, but it's time to stop and go, oh, here I am again. Oh, here's my hostility again, my mental illness. Oh, I need to ask to be shown how to heal this in me, rather than trying to figure out how you're going to make sure the other guy knows it's all their fault that you're in upset and pain again. So it's a powerful process to recognize that by letting go, you get to hold on. By letting go, you loose the blocks on your creatorship, and then you get to create what it is that you've been hoping for, wishing for, waiting for. So there's a short sprint at understanding the process that we're talking about. And, of course, we've got years of conversation going on here with the show. Dr. Tim speaking of the forgiveness process from his perspective, and then the forgiveness process of reality management, and recognizing that it's time for us to let loose all the things we think we want, the trifling treasures put away. And why would the Course call what you're canceling the goal a trifling treasure? Because if you don't have your connection to love, you don't have anything. If you're not experiencing yourself as the truth of who you are, your true identity, then you have nothing. And when you have nothing, all kinds of goals will come in and say, oh, if you just had enough money, if you just had enough sex, if you just had a bigger house, if you just had a finer car, if you just had faster horses. And guess what? All of those things. If you could just get that person to obey you, if you could just get that person to hear you, all of those things are trifling treasures. Put them away. Leave a clean and open space within your mind for absolute, total, the absolute, total, perfect presence of love, and you get to experience your human life. And now, for fulfillment, nothing else is required. Everything else becomes a bonus. You might remember in the ancient scriptures they said, seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and all other things will be made unto you. We could shift that into a language that's consistent with what I've just been saying, is seek ye first the kingdom of your creatorship free of blocks, and everything else will be made unto you. The kingdom of heaven, by the way, in Aramaic, a mistranslation to call it that from the Greek translations, the words the kingdom of heaven in Aramaic would translate as the community of love. To be restored to yourself and those around you, experiencing yourself and each other as the presence of love. And if you've got a trifling treasure that gets in the way, then you can be sure that life is going to deliver you somebody who's going to do the perfect set of behaviors that are going to go to the deepest parts of your physiology and reflect in the aware parts of your mind that there's a disturbance in the force. And when you recognize there's this disturbance in the force, instead of looking around for who disturbed you as though somebody else could possibly cause something to happen inside of you that isn't already there. And I forget who the band was. Their song, one of the lines in their song, I think it was the Eagles. Yeah, the Eagles. And it's a song complaining about women. And then they kind of lay the line on you. But she can't take you anywhere that you don't already know where to go. Do you know why you went there? Because you know how to go there. Do you know why you go there over and over and over again, and person after person, and circumstance after circumstance, and situation after situation seems to take you there? because it's inside of you, and you won't face it. You're still in denial. You still think somebody else is the problem. And you refuse to recognize that everything and everyone around you is there offering you opportunities. Now, the opportunities don't usually feel good, because the opportunities mean that that person has resonated the part of you that's restricting the flow of love through your structure. If you go back to Yeshua, you hear him clearly saying what he's here for. He says, doesn't say anything about coming to bring you dogma or doctrine. He says, I come to bring you life. Life more abundantly. What is life? I would offer that life is love flowing through a cell. When you do something that inhibits the flow of love through your cellular structure, and you deny ownership for that, you're going to get a whole procession of people. And the better you are at your denial and hiding it from yourself, the more powerfully somebody's going to come in and show it to you. And if you watch, when it's shown to you, you'll want to run away from it. You'll want to get on an airplane and go somewhere else. You'll want to get out of Dodge. You'll want to hang up the phone. And you'll refuse all pleas to say, wait a minute. Stay here. Stay in the conversation. This is a process we're entering into. It's not time to run away. It's not time to escape and blame and tell everybody else what's wrong with them. It's time to breathe. It's time to own what's moving in you. And the more deeply you're in denial, the more opportunities you'll get to learn forgiveness. So in essence, that's the bottom line of that paradox we started out with. And our objective is to offer the tools and the support for each and every one of us to move through whatever it is we need to move through. And I love Richard Bach's assertion where he says, we teach best that which we most need to learn. And so here we are, still teaching forgiveness, learning on deeper and deeper and deeper levels what it means to remove every energetic pattern that never belonged within the structure. And so hopefully that will resonate some things for you, and we'll get to have a conversation about it. So if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number directly, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, you'll be listening to the show. And then if you push 1, that will raise a hand in the control panel. And I have Jeannie's phone in my hand. She's driving down Highway 70 on our trip into Kansas City. And so if you push 1, I'll see your hand go up in this little control panel and push a button, and through the magic of technology, we'll have a conversation. So if you're out there in listener land, what's on your mind? How can we support you? What's happening in your world? What's happening with your personal process? Can we support you in it? Is there any kind of question that you have about using the tools of forgiveness? Push 1. Let's have a conversation. What's on your mind? 563-999-3581. Any thoughts for you, Jeannie? No, she's just smiling, shook her head no. So if you're out there listening, then how can we support you? And I'm kind of finished with my monologue. since we're on the road, if we don't have any other questions or thoughts, I'll make a last call to say that we'll close the show if you don't have any other thoughts for us. And Jeannie did just remind me that we're going to be sending out a newsletter soon. I'm still working on the article to go in it, so we'll see how the time unfolds for getting that out in our email. But if you'd like to have a copy of it, I've turned this article what started out as an article into a course. So it's going to be a step-by-step course on understanding all the stages, at least all the stages that come to mind for me, in understanding the healing process and stepping through healing both reflections of our lives, what we call the body, what we call mind. And so if you're interested in being on the mailing list to receive that, if you go to our website, whyagain.org, the bottom of the page, there's a heart. If you click there, it says sign up for our newsletter, put your email in it, and then confirm it. And when that email goes out, you'll have a copy of it. So I'm going to make a last call for hands up if you're out there in listener land. I would much rather have a conversation and continue through the full timing of the show. But, and there we go. We've got a caller, and this is 864. 864, you're on the air.
Hey, let's see. I'm 864-303-1044. Yes, sir.
We got you, Joe. So how are you, sir?
Carving out a human life since 1959.
There you go. It's quite an amazing gift to get the opportunity to do that, isn't it?
It's a joyful reunion when I touch my human side. It's wonderful.
Your true humanity. I hear you.
Because I tell you what, the other the loop.
When somebody shows you those, this is so much fun, is it?
The loop, the cul-de-sac of hostility and fear is just, man. I really appreciate that. I got, just so you know, it's very exciting. I was accepted by the Facebook page, and also Yurate sent her intensive program.
Right,
yeah,
for the cookbook. So you've got all that food information now as part of the intensive. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So moving in that direction, but I wanted to call because just absolutely the depth of the codependency, the worksheet, the latest one that you guys sent me, I mean, it just opens up all kinds of, really, you can see what I find interesting how these things evolve too is, the pseudo aspect and how, there's this, there's that, there's all kinds of different ways to remain in the non-human state or non-being state.
Right.
And so just, I've got a weekend coming up here where you've got some stuff I want to do, but also we'll be hunkering down to just be with the power person worksheet.
Nice.
Yeah, it's nice, and it's nice because of the application in all. I don't see any other area because, I learned and I was brought up with the, really it's the answer to the upbringing and being brought up in this culture and this as human beings and being going through, with Joe and Janet, my parents, and now having a solution or having a way of tapping into my being and dwelling in that place is a welcomed chore to just be with and work through. So, thank you.
I hear you. There's nothing
also,
more exciting once
yeah,
you get what it's
the
about.
The other thing too is the question and answer segments on the intensive with the Venmo, you know, over the internet. That's very, very, you know, the courage that people have is so abundant when they feel safe, and then the, you know, having that safety and a willingness, when you hear it, when I hear it in someone else, then I feel that, okay, you know, it's safe for me to do as well, so appreciate it.
I'm with you. I'm with you 100%
on
that. And were you with us through the whole show today?
No, I just showed up.
Were you with us from the beginning? Say again.
No, I got yelled at. I got yelled at earlier by the host. And I still think that when I come on this show, I should be, you know, there should be some kind of fanfare as a special guest.
Compensation or
no.
Something like that, yeah.
No. Something. I mean,
paid
appearances. I want like horns or, you know, bells or something. I mean, Jeannie can do it. I know she has the talent. I mean,
Jeannie,
could
you say honk honk, please, for Joe?
Honk honk.
There you go. You got it.
Thank you very
live.
Much.
Live. Well,
woo.
When we had talked earlier today, what I was going to share from yesterday's show is that, and I alluded to it here, but more completely, there's a post that I do a couple times a year around, I mentioned that, around the holidays about alcohol. And a guy had written an article, it was a gal, and she was 28, and her article was, I'm going to stop, you know, October is sober October. Apparently it's a thing for bringing people into recovery. And so she wrote, I'm going to stop forcing myself to drink alcohol because everybody else, you know, I'm at a party or whatever, wants you to drink with them. And, you know, her whole story. And that kind of set me into reposting this thing that I've been actually working on for a couple of years. And in doing some research, I came across another piece that was written by someone in recovery. And something I didn't know was that alcoholism is in the DSM-5, which is the official manual for psychiatrists and psychologists of mental illness, that alcoholism is an actual mental illness. And based on that and, you know, putting different pieces together, this person had written, you know, well, get mad about the fact that alcoholics aren't being treated well. And I wrote back to them. And what just became clear as I was writing about that is, here you are appealing for help for alcoholics because alcoholism is a mental illness, and you're telling people to get angry about the fact that the alcoholics aren't getting enough support. And that's another mental illness. You're calling for somebody to step into. And, you know, it was just another level of insight for me to be able to say to myself, when hostility comes up, oh, that's my mental illness. And I want to be shown how to heal it. And, you know, what I notice when I do that is I get in touch with another level of tension in my own body, and I realize, you know, the perspectives body-mind, and that it's going on physiologically, and I get to look at my own physiology on another level, get to open so much more. And so it was just, that's what I was, you know, going to share this morning, and then you've got a client you needed to get with. So,
well,
so
and the other thing that I really enjoy the whiteboard and the way things become. I don't want to say the word, but they become like silos. I look at them like you draw silos. So they're the long rectangular, you know, and everybody has six people in their relationship, and the silos, collapsing the silo, I guess, is the imagery for me when hostility and fear, when they show up, that hostility and fear, look at it, be with it, see it, recognize it, you know, and then go through Rukha Dukusha, let it collapse, and then as you say with your eraser, you know, little by little you're going to, those brain cells will lose strength, and you have a new structure. You're working on creating, as you point out, hey, let's be creators, not just replicators, you know?
Exactly. So, exactly.
That'll be my new, I think I'm going to work on a new dance title. It'll be, let's create, not replicate. Right on, brother.
There you go. Sounds like a great song title.
See what comes up.
For sure.
So, yeah. How's the trip?
Good, good. We are probably about an hour or so from our meeting our new granddaughter, so that's pretty exciting. And we had fun with our two granddaughters and my son-in-law and daughter in St. Louis last night. And we'll hopefully get to see them on our way back, but we're going to be with our new Kaylee Jo for the next 10 days or so, just hanging out and supporting my son and his wife, and as they get back to routine, he took a month off work after the baby was born, and so we set it up instead of being there for the birth to come a month later to just hang out with him and be of support. So
that's great. Congratulations.
Yeah. All right. One other thought that comes, good breath. That's the kind that heals. There's another great that ties in with our earlier conversation from the Course in Miracles. And when the course says is, bring the world you do not want to the one you do.
Right.
And you look at step 4 in the current 7-step worksheet, and you're pulling forward, you're bringing forward active present love. And then step 5, you're collapsing the goal. A, 5B, ask the Rukha to bring up. So you bring it forward in the presence of love. You're bringing what you do not want, the history, the past, the tension in the body, wherever it's stored, which is the tension in the mind.
Yep.
And as you open and bring that to love, there's the healing. That's what transmutes the energy. And that's the instant at which forgiveness occurs. And that, to me, the genius of Yeshua's forgiveness process is just beyond comprehension. When you understand, it took me 35 years to understand what I just said in the last minute and a half, but it's just, you know, it's monumental.
It is an absolute joy to accompany you and to be a part of your, you know, all this work that you've done. And I know I'm not alone when I say thank you. And I will add that it is amazing how, I don't know why, but my upper region of my calf, there seems to be something, there's a pain there, and it came up this morning when I was working through the intensive, and I just thought to myself, you know, wow, what is, you know, something in my calf and energy was just like it's almost like, you know, in terms of a illustration, it's like a knocking at the door, like,
right,
okay, you
the
know,
muscles
let me out
responding.
Yeah
so you look at the mind energy on cleaning up there, and that's the part of your computer, that's the part of your biocomputer that mind energy was sorted. The mind works through every cell in the body, and that's why diseases happen all over the body, because we store this disintegrative energy in different places, and when we allow access, that's where the healing that goes way beyond just treatment happens.
Yeah. I thought today you mentioned the speed with which the mind works to keep us in the non-being state is it's you talk about lightning or whatever. I mean, it's in a blink of an eye to keep me in that non-being, and it's very fascinating to, at least, you know, with the work I'm able to discover and see the speed. That's another thing. Is like I'm able to catch up and say, wait a minute, whoa, I saw that. I see you.
Yeah. You're not going to run me.
And work. No, right. Exactly. You're not going to run me. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Well, the other thing to catch about the mind is how quickly it changes stories. You know, when one thing doesn't work, when one thing's made irrational and illogical, then what the mind will do is it will turn around with a totally different story, and unless you're doing your work, you forget that the previous story was told. You know, when the first story is made illogical, well, I'm only doing this because blah, 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 and I share with somebody, and that makes it, and that story drops away, and all of a sudden, they've instantly got another story, and they literally forget that the first story was the reason it was happening. Now it's because of this story. And then when that story is made illogical, that one disappears, and it'll give you another story. And if you say, well, but 2 minutes ago you were saying this. No, I didn't. It's like, that's exactly what you did. We got 30 people in the room that all heard it. But the
amazing
mind is,
repeatability.
I mean, it's so fast. It's just, what a trick. You know, you know why the Native Americans called it the trickster, the wily coyote. That's
right,
the mind.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Exactly.
Getting
right.
Loose quite a journey.
it's a trickster, all right. And it's just fascinating to,
Another thing that I brought up yesterday, I was talking about Paul's statement where he says we see as though through a glass darkly, and we're seeing through this mind. That's what he's referring to as the mind. And the word darkly in the origin text in the Greek, that word is enigma, which is something confusing and not understandable. So we see it through something confusing and not understandable, and it darkens our ability to be with the truth. And, you know, it's just when you see it in action, when you catch your own mind that it's crap, it's quite a happening. Awesome. Well, it's a delight to share this journey with you, my friend.
Thank you. You too, Judy.
All right, well, any other thoughts for you?
That's it, brother.
I'll give
you
a hug
again.
For you. Okay, take care.
Thank you. Thank you. All right.
Bye. Hey, you're welcome.
Blessings.
Erico 314, you are on the air. Give us a name. Where are you calling from? 314.
Hello, Michael. This is Doug, St. Louis.
Well, hey, Doug. Welcome, good sir. How are you?
Thanks. Good. Glad you're having a good trip, sounds like. That's great.
We are. How about you? What's happening in your world?
I'm calling for a mind shifter. I want a mind shifter because I was doing some worksheets and I came up with some realities that earning money is life-threatening and I resist, therefore, because I don't want to be captured, held hostage, enslaved, or killed by earning money. And I thought that it would be very useful to work more into that mind shifter, so I thought maybe you could suggest one.
Sure. Wow, that's a big one. So if you earn money, you'll be killed for it.
Yes, killed or enslaved or all of the above, basically, yes. Sad things would happen,
So when you touched into that, did a memory show up with that? I mean, is it just kind of an echo, a reflection, or is there an actual memory that goes with it?
Well, I feel like it's probably more than just this, but my father's situation definitely came to mind, the level of sacrifice he made to be able to provide enough money for us to survive, and that eventually it killed him. It literally did. And then my grandfather, kind of a similar images, somewhat not as dramatic, but to a lesser degree. So I was like, okay, well, that's kind of intense. So, you know, I can feel that in me, and I want to look into it more deeply. Sure.
That's a big one.
Yes, I think so.
All right. Well, how about a mind shifter? We have a mind shifter for that.
Fabulous.
We're driving along Highway 70 here, and there's a house just off the highway. There's a jet plane sitting in their front yard, a small jet.
Huh?
It's like, oh, that's interesting.
What?
Anyway, yeah, literally, just right, like 100, 200 feet off the highway.
I guess that's an example of how earning money is safe and helpful
there
for travel.
There you go. Yeah, there you go. You have a jet in your front yard.
Okay.
So how about the more money I earn, comma.
Okay.
And it comes easily, comma.
Yeah.
The more vital my body and mind become.
Oh, yeah.
Comma.
All right.
Comma.
Okay.
Earning money. Is one of the pathways that supports me having eternal life. That sounds like it's resonating a few things for you.
It's awesome. Yeah. Yes. Definitely. That's like, oh my goodness. What a radical idea.
There you go.
Yeah, what a radical idea. What a completely opposite view that is. My God, that's perfectly perfect.
Sounds like it just cuts right to the core of the resonance of what you need to process that one out. That's going to change your world.
Yeah.
You know, Doug, I can remember when I first started doing this work. You know, I came from a world where if you were going to do spiritual work, you had to be broke. That was like one of my core issues. And for the first 7 years I did this work full time, I left the business world. When I left the business world, I literally had a Mark III parked on one side of my driveway and an Eldorado on the other. I had a penthouse apartment in one city. I had homes in two other cities. I left the business world, went back to school, and started to do this work full-time. And for literally 7 years, there were times when I didn't know how I was going to feed my kids tomorrow. And I can remember the instant that changed for me, and I can tell you exactly where I was on the face of the earth. I was driving down, I was doing a lot of workshops at Unity in Fort Lauderdale, and they had asked me to do a particular Sunday, and they asked me a couple of months in advance. And I said, yeah, I'll be available that date. And so they put it on their calendar and said, and what's your title going to be? And I had no idea. I hadn't thought about it, and I just said, Prelude to Prosperity. I didn't have any thought about it. That came out of my mouth. I gave them that title. Well, 2 months later, I still don't know. It's the night before. I still don't know what I'm going to talk about tomorrow morning in their Sunday service. All I've got is a title. I don't have a clue what I'm going to do with it. But in a dream, I get a word and a page number in the dictionary, and I'm told to look up that word. So I get up in the morning and I open the dictionary to that page, and sure enough, that word is on that page. And out of that definition came my whole talk that morning. I was up in North Palm Beach. I had to drive to Fort Lauderdale. I was driving down I-95. I was at Hillsboro Boulevard. And I'm doing this presentation in this workshop on prosperity. And I've got literally $102 in my pocket, and the next day I'm supposed to be getting my kids in the car and driving back up to North Georgia from South Florida, stocking the fridge and being back in North Georgia. I'm told, as I'm driving down the highway, like, you know, what am I going to do? Where am I going to come up with enough gas money and then food money to drive back to North Georgia? And I'm told, as I'm approaching Hillsborough Boulevard, to get off the highway and go to a bank and take $100 of the $102 that's in my pocket and turned into a $100 bill and give it away. And I was like, are you kidding me? I got off the highway. I got a $100 bill. In the workshop, I created an exercise where I invited, you know, I went through the scriptural idea. You're going to get a multiple back 10 times, 100, 1,000 fold. How much do you want? Oh, $1 million. Okay, well, get the 100 grand out of your pocket and give it away. Well, no, we're not going to do that. So, okay, what are you willing to give away? Fold it up in your hand, write a check to cash, or take the cash out of your pocket, whatever you're willing to give away, put it in your hand, and get up and start circulating around the room. And on signal, without looking at what a person's handing you, you're going to receive what they've got in their hand, and you're going to give them what you've got in your hand. Did that about, I don't know, 6, 8, 10 times, whatever, had people do that exchange. And that was the exercise. I gave away the $100 bill, and I got back a $20 bill. The next day I was supposed to get in the car. We loaded the kids in the car. I borrowed some money from the person we were staying with. Load the kids in the car, put the key in the ignition, and for the first time in about 60,000 miles, the car won't start. I take that as a signal. Several people have been saying, look, you can't leave. You got to stay here. You got things going. You've been here for, I've been there for about 5 months by that point. Our house, we'd rented a house in North Georgia, and the pipes had frozen Christmas Eve, and so we had to move out of the house, came to South Florida. And so I took that as a signal. That, like, I mean, when I turned the key, nothing, not even the click of the solenoid on the starter. Unloaded the car, unpacked the kids. The next week, the phone started to ring, and I had a full-time practice in South Florida. And I made triple what I'd ever made in any week since I'd started doing this work in 7 years earlier. And it's never dropped below that since. I mean, literally, that was the minute where it shifted for me. And, you know, I can almost just see, you know, get the sense of how at that point, energetically, as I made that shift in me, everything in my world shifted around that. And I mean, so at what moment and what is the stimulus that brings up what it is that we're withholding our creatorship with? I don't know, but that mentorship is probably going to open it for you.
I think so. That's quite a story.
All right, my friend.
Yeah, all right.
That was, I mean, it burned it into my brain. I mean, literally, it's like everything to do with financial flow shifted in that instant, and it's never been the same since. It's never gone back to that, why is this happening to me? And I realized that it was that I had this belief you have to be in poverty to do spiritual work. When I was in the business world, as I say, I had a Mark III and an Eldorado. I was single. Now I've got kids, and for 7 years, I don't know how I'm going to feed them. That's the impact of forgiveness.
Right.
All right, my friend. Well, we're down to the last minute or so, so I'm just going to say thank you for your questions and your thoughts. I bet that wasn't just for you or for me. It was for all of us, and it's sweet to be in this journey together, and we invite everybody to create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world, and blessings. Take care. Bye-bye.